Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway. Lays it in. Zach LaVine does it again.
A late shot on the
rim. Oh, the finisher, Lowry Markkanen.
The crossover. LaVine.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
What's up, guys? In case you haven't heard, Blue Wire teamed up with Greg Olson of the Seattle Seahawks to launch his brand new pod, TE1. Greg sat down with some of the best tight ends in NFL history and went in depth on the evolution of the tight end position. Chicago sports fans will not want to miss this episode where Greg sits down with Bears rookie tight end Cole Kmet. Greg talks with the rookie about all things NFL ahead of his first season. Check the description box for a link to the feed or just search TE1 anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And just like Greg revolutionized the tight end position, you can revolutionize your football experience with NFL Sunday Ticket, directed by DirecTV. Catch all of the out-of-market games every week on all your devices and never miss a moment from all your favorite players. Go to NFLSundayTicket.tv, use promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv, promo code BLUEWIRE. All right, what's up? This is Cash Considerations. We're brought to you by NFL Sunday Ticket. We're brought to you by TheraOne CBD. We are brought to you by Bet Online. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm here, as always, with Jason Pat. Jason, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good. Enjoying the playoffs. They've been a lot of fun. Luka Doncic, absolutely incredible yesterday. Seen some great games. Jimmy Butler, we love Jimmy Butler here on the Cash Considerations pod. They just swept the Indiana Pacers in four games. I know Jimmy got hurt, a shoulder injury today, but a sweep setting up what will most likely be a series against the Milwaukee Bucks. It's been, pretty eventful, weekend in the NBA with some of these great series. I mentioned Luka and the game winner, absolutely iconic shot. It was just an awesome game without Porzingis, and he puts up like a 43-17-13 triple double, and then the game winner in OT after like a 21 point comeback. So that was awesome. The Thunder today just tied that series up at 2-2. These Western Conference series have been pretty fun. I know Nuggets Jazz is 3-1, and now it looks the Lakers on Mamba Day are beating the Blazers by 30. So that whole Blazers story was fun for a while, but that's finished now. Looking around elsewhere on the league, we saw the Sixers get bounced. They got their ass swept by the Celtics, and Brett Brown got fired today. They wasted no time. We saw the knives were out for Brett Brown even before he was fired. Like the leaks were coming, the dirt was being dropped about the situation. Jimmy Butler, I guess just right out here at the top of my Brett Brown. What would you think of him as a Bulls coach? I know Ime Udoka is also another possible option, and he'll be an option in Philadelphia as well.
Well, I think that this is a good time to introduce our guest.
Let's do it.
It's Cosmos, one of my favorite people on Twitter. At Cosmos, his name's Brian, so I'll probably call him Brian on accident during this podcast. So I'm just going to say it up front. Brian, first of all, thanks for joining us, man. Yes, Brian is one of the great draft voices out there. I love all of Cosmos's tweets. Anything coming from the Cosmos account is some high quality shit. And I'm not just saying that because he is on the podcast. I like most of his tweets throughout the day. So, Brian, how do you feel, first of all, about, potentially Brett Brown, Bulls coach? He got fired today. What's your interest level? Do you have any general Brett Brown thoughts on the day he gets fired?
He would certainly be the sexiest Bulls coach, him and Hoiberg.
Well, he's Australian, so they're all
sexy. Great accent. I always forget that he has it. When he starts talking, I'm like, oh, yeah, I love
this. Bizarre accent, talk. Yeah. I'm fine with it. He's a good coach. I don't really know. It's hard to really predict. We don't think they're going to blow the team up, but they could.
Yeah, the reporting out there is that they're going to keep Embiid and Simmons together. Who knows? Are you talking about the Bulls? Bulls or Sixers?
Bulls, actually.
Okay,
I was going to be the coach. Who's going to be there?
Yeah.
Here's my head coaching take. We're going to start off with some hot takes on this podcast.
Let's do it.
Because I don't want – so I think the Bulls should hire an African-American coach because they've only had one in franchise history. It was Bill Cartwright.
Pete Myers, technically.
Oh, Pete Myers, too, as well. But the Bulls, he was an interim. Cartwright wasn't an interim, I don't believe, but he had a very short stint as head coach. The Bulls have needed more diversity throughout the organization for a long time. I think especially coming off the heels of these reports that Jim Boylan was arguably the NBA's biggest MAGA guy. That was reported by Henry Abbott at True Hoop. As if you couldn't think Jim Boylan would get any worse, here it is. And I think like coming off that scenario to really get like a brush of fresh air through the organization, I would love to see them hire like Wes Unseld Jr. or Darvin Ham or any of the other.
What if said Adrian Griffin, but ooh.
I know. Well, of course, I had to bite my tongue when I was going to say Adrian Griffin. But the Bulls do have seemingly a lot of good, diverse candidates for this job. Darnell Mayberry wrote a great piece on it at The Athletic, sort of laying out a lot of the first-time head coaches they could be looking at. And that's kind of what I want to see them do. I think, you know, like Atkinson is a good coach and, you know, whatever. They could get him and he could be like your C to B coach. I think Brett Brown probably fills a similar role. And like Brian said, we don't know what the makeup of the Bulls roster is going to look like or what this coach is going to have to work with. But I think, you know, it's overdue for the Bulls to get some diversity throughout the front office. And especially coming off the Jim Boylan experience, it would just be a breath of fresh air.
I would personally, I personally hope for Ime or Wes Unseld Jr. And Darvin Ham too. Darvin Ham seems like a nice guy. So it's somebody. Even Sam Cassell, like Stackhouse, there's candidates. I don't think Stackhouse is married to the Vanderbilt job.
No, he, yeah. And,
you know, how the college, awful the college, they were.
The college coach that never gets named that I would like to see get a shot is Anthony Grant. I thought that Dayton ran the
great coach
to an NBA offense in college basketball last year. And I'm a little surprised that you haven't heard Anthony Grant's name mentioned for these high-profile NBA jobs yet.
What do you think of Juwan Howard? I saw Woj bring him up today, where he came and said that I'm staying.
I selfishly don't want to see him to leave until he coaches his son, his other son at Michigan, because Jace is there this year. And then Jet Howard is more than likely coming in, I think, 2 years, I think. I forget how old he is.
I'm not sure.
But Jet's really good. Jet's a really good shooter. Jace is just like a guy, but I mean, you know, he could play college. But I just selfishly, I like when a college coach at a major university somehow gets his son on the team. It's wonderful nepotism. And then sometimes it works out where like Oregon State had their Wayne Jingle's son Trace, who was like one of the best players in the Pac-12 for the last 3 years. Yeah, I think it should be a first time coach, I think. Unless, I mean, Brett or Kenny Atkinson, I wouldn't be mad at, but I think they need to figure out what they need to do is ask Wendell who he wants to, if he wants to coach, and then if he doesn't want to coach, then get somebody that he likes.
And with that,
the first question they should ask any potential hire is, what are you going to do with Wendell Carter?
I love that. Yeah, he was horribly misused, of course.
Horribly misused.
His time with the Bulls this year. We have Brian on because Brian is one of the sharpest NBA draft analysts out there on Twitter. And if you're not following at Cosmos, make sure you're doing it. He drops a lot of great NBA draft coverage, you know, through a statistical lens. I really like everything Brian's throwing out there. So when we had Brian on in, you know, the little pre-show chat before we started recording, he said that he was going to give us an opening salvo on the 2020 NBA draft. So, Cosmos, the floor is yours.
It's the first draft since 2013 where there's not a confirmed good player. Like, every draft, because 2014 is Embiid. I mean, we thought it was then. It definitely is Embiid. And then 2015 was Cat, for sure. 2016 was Ben Simmons. 2017 was Fultz coming into the draft. 18 was Luka. 19 was Zion. Like those, there's not a confirmed number one pick guy since 2013 is the last time. Cause I don't know if you remember, Ricky, Nerlens Noel was like the big number one recruit guy.
Oh, of course.
And he was probably going to be the number one pick until he tore his ACL.
And then it was Anthony Bennett.
Yeah. And then it was nobody. Now I think whoever this first pick is, even if it's Wiseman, will probably be better than Anthony Bennett, even though I'm
the low bar.
I mean, I have Wiseman in the 20s. I don't think he's particularly good. Like, not like at superstar level good. He's like Hassan Whiteside. But I'm also confident the Bulls. I'm very glad they got four. I was getting a little nervous when they jumped into the top four that they would get like three and take him. But I don't think he's going to get past Jordan because just how Michael Jordan drafts. It's just he's heard of James Wiseman, so he'll take him. And they do need it. They need like size, so I guess it's not the worst pick. But I like LaMelo a lot, but I don't think he's like a consensus number one player. Part of that is he's got like a weird. He's both over and underrated because he's a ball. Where like some people think he's just some scrub who's only a prospect because of who his family is, and not that he's a 6'8 point guard who does he's like one of the best dribblers at that size in the history of basketball, and makes like Jason Williams passes. But yeah, and Edwards is like physically the number one pick, but he's just kind of spacey. He's got a lot of Wiggins in his game where he just sort of stops playing for long stretches, and it's not very. I mean, I think everyone saw on the draft lottery special. He even said, "Yeah, I had a lot of bad games this year." You don't want the number one pick saying right. that. That's a bad thing to hear. I don't like that. But I mean, he does have like he's a good pull up shooter. He's 6'5", 220. Like he'll probably be good. But there's. I don't think there's anyone at the top of the draft that's like a guaranteed all star. Is what I'm getting at.
Who do you think will go number one versus who would you take number one?
Well, that's a question. So I think it's gonna be Edwards or Ball, whoever Minnesota likes more. I would go Ball. I personally like my number one player is Alexei Pokuševski, but that's not even necessarily saying that I would take him number one. It's just looking at who has the highest ceiling, like who has that All-NBA ceiling, and it's like, well, that 7 foot guy who shoots threes and had five assists per 36 and like eight stocks and shot 79% from the line, and it's like this freak dribbler. But that doesn't necessarily mean I take him one, because I feel like if you take him one and he doesn't work, you're fired. You know, you're gone.
Yes.
But I mean, like Dragan Bender went third, and he's a better prospect than Dragan Bender. He doesn't have the confidence issues that Dragan Bender has. Where Dragan Bender looked like he never wanted to play when he missed a shot, he looked like he wanted to quit playing basketball. Pokuševski takes the wild ass shots. He takes like two or three dribbles between his legs, pull up like 30 footers sometimes.
Love it.
Somebody described him, one out of every three times he has the ball, he's going to do something incredibly, either incredibly stupid or incredibly skilled, and it usually works somehow. He's a freak. He's also, he turns 19 the day after Christmas, which is insane. He's one of the youngest draft eligible players of all time. Like, I think Sekou Doumbouya was like, he's the 22nd or 23rd of December, so he's even younger than Sekou was last year. But the Bulls aren't going to take him, unless Karnisovas goes crazy. Sounds like they're going to take Denny Avdia, which is fine. It's not who I would take, but, you know.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, pretty much every team, the top two teams for sure, I think are going to be looking to trade out. And that's Minnesota and Golden State. So, like, we don't really know where Minnesota is going in this draft with Rosas as the GM. I was really high on Culver last year, and he traded up to get Culver. I think, what did it cost him, like 11 and Saric to move up to number six?
I think so.
To get Culver?
Sounds right.
So, you know, I think that, to me, LaMelo is the best player in the draft. I mean, I don't feel super confident about it. Like Brian said, like, there's no one in this draft who you can confidently say is definitely going to be a good NBA player coming into it. I mean, it's Desmond Bane.
An all-star, yeah. Like, yeah. Bane and, like, Tillman and, like, Isaiah Joe, it's like, those guys will be solid NBA players, probably. But, like, there's nobody you look at and be like, yeah, that guy's an all-star. Even Fultz, like, Fultz probably won't be an all-star. I mean, he could still happen. But, I mean, coming into the draft, it was like, yeah, that guy's an all-star. And then it turned out that guy was Tatum, and we missed it, and Mitchell. But that happens.
No doubt. And I'm glad you brought up 2013, because I'm looking at the 2013 draft now, and obviously you had Giannis. So, like, you know, in your estimation, maybe Poku is the Giannis of this class. You know, like,
play the same league.
Yeah, they did both play in the second division of the
league. He won't add that kind of strength, though. Like, that's, Giannis is such a freak outlier, like,
right,
work ethic guy. But Poku, I mean, it's a credit to him. He learned English when he was like 16. That's usually a good sign of like somebody who takes it seriously. He just is so skinny. Like, he has no weight on his body. He's going to be a bad, like, under the, like, he did shoot over 60% at the rim, which is encouraging, but he's going to be like a bad, it's going to be hard for him to score inside the arc for a while, I think.
Sure. And then, like, you look at the rest of that 13 draft. You had Rudy Gobert. He went 27. Obviously, 27. Great player. CJ McCollum, Victor Oladipo, Otto Porter. You had Steven Adams. You had guys who are somewhat useful, like Olynyk, even Mason Plumlee. You know, is that a
decent player? And McLemore at this point has become good. Trey Burke.
Yeah.
Trey Burke. Great story.
Yes. Trey Burke's been very good. So
Tony Snell, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The legend.
My guy.
So, Brian, would you say that when the Bulls are on the clock at number four, how likely, what percentage do you think it is that Wiseman, Ball, and Edwards are all off the clock? Like, do you say it's an 80%
chance? Pretty high. Yeah, I would say 75, 80 at least. I think those are going to be the first three picks. And I think you can tell that because those are the three guys the NBA is pushing. Yeah. And that the NBA would know if anyone, like, you know, they would have an idea. Yeah, I feel like those are going to be the first three picks, even if they get traded. Like, I don't think Wiseman, even if LaMelo falls, I think the Bulls would take Wiseman because it just seems like how Jordan would operate because he's bad at the job he has.
Do you think the Hornets would take Wiseman over LaMelo? Yeah, maybe. I would really disagree with that selection. I would think that that was like borderline malpractice, but
I don't think LaMelo is going to get to them, though. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay, so then, you know, we're looking at a scenario where the Bulls have the fourth pick. So now, let's just talk about... Yeah.
Hold on, Ricky, before we go on, let's do a quick break before we get into this Bulls stuff. Quick word from our sponsors. From tight muscles, tough workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands what it feels like to be tense and sore, so everyone can benefit from TheraOne CBD products. Started by Dr. Jason Worsland, Therabody exists to provide you with the best scientifically validated natural solutions to help soothe your body and relax your mind. It started with the revolutionary Theragun percussive therapy device when Dr. Jason saw the benefits of using CBD in his treatments. He created TheraOne to bring you CBD products done right. A lot of CBD products claim organic, but still contain up to 30% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic. TheraOne tests their products four times before they get to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the U.S., and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. So use TheraOne's warming lotion in your morning routine, the cooling lotion or massage oil to recover, body balm for targeted relief, and the sleep tincture to drift into a deep night's sleep. So now through Labor Day, that's Monday, September 7th, TheraOne is offering our listeners here at Cash Considerations a buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products. You've got to go to theragun.com/bluewire. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, send it back for a full refund within 30 days of purchase. It's not something TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at theragun.com/bluewire, but only until Labor Day. So go right now to theragun.com/bluewire.
Sundays are coming back in the NFL with NFL Sunday Ticket.tv. You can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on all your favorite devices, plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels, so you never have to miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFL Sunday Ticket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv. Use promo code BLUEWIRE. All right, we're back. Cash considerations. So if we're agreeing that Wiseman, Edwards, and Ball are going to be off the board when the Bulls come at number four, Brian, who would you take?
Killian Hayes. It's no doubt.
That's who I would take as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I like Denny. Like, Denny's getting some flack for the competition level, which isn't really his fault, and he can't shoot, but he is like good, like legitimately good at defense and good at passing. So like it's not hard to see Denny like starting on a playoff team. It's just like his maximum outcome is like what, Saric?
I don't see a path for Denny to get to all-star level.
No.
And that's why I haven't really understood the top five hype on him tracking this class all year. So for someone who like has never read or heard anything about Denny, do you want to give us like the 10,000 foot overview of his game and how he could potentially fit in the league?
He's 6'8" and he's a good passer. I don't know. He's weird because he's like, he's not super athletic, but he's a very good rim protector. It's just like a guy who bodies people up and blocks and like block shots on the weak side. He high points rebounds. he's going to get Doncic comparisons because he's a white guy who's good at dribbling and passing. But he's sort of like if you took Luka's shot making ability away but made him okay at defense, which is like a weird player. I don't really know how to classify him.
I was gonna bring up Doncic because I feel like I've seen that. I feel like Doncic like being so good is it like helping him? Because now people are like, oh, this European guy, like look at what Luka is doing, and like now we should take this next hyped guy from the international guy.
The difference he's definitely being helped by it. The difference is that Luka was like a 21 a game scorer at 18 in the EuroLeague, yeah. Then he's like a 12 game a scorer in the Israeli Premier League.
League, yeah.
Yeah. But he has played EuroLeague minutes and he's been fine. He's been pretty good.
The only way Denny could return top five value, in circling back to the Luka comparison, is if you think Denny could be a primary creator.
Yeah.
So I don't think he can do that. How do you?
No.
He's more of a secondary, I would say.
Absolutely.
And if you're more of a secondary, you kind of got to be really good in catch-and-shoot situations to play high-level minutes in the NBA.
He's not even a good foul shooter. That's the Achilles heel, really.
Under 60%.
Which is frightening. That's a frighteningly bad mark for a ball handler.
I did see what his three-point shooting was kind of getting better, like as going on. I saw some stats like that, but I mean, obviously, the free throw shooting—if that's bad, that's not as you said, not ideal.
I think the problem he has is that he has like a big body. Like he's listed at what 6'8", 6'9", like 220, but he's just one of those guys who's just kind of big in his hips and like big in his like not like a fat guy, but just like a big not, like Luka kind of is
thick.
Yeah, kind of.
He's got that Jabari Parker lower half.
Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, he's got much better. Like, he's much, much better defensively already. But, like, yeah, sometimes I think it's hard for him to, like, shoot pull-ups. I've noticed that. He's kind of heavy-footed on those. He's a guy who gets a lot of foot-in-the-line threes from what I remember seeing.
So, but if Denny is the pick, do you see him as a three or a four with the Bulls? And how do you think he fits in, like, next to Wendell or next to Lowry at all? Does Lowry have to get moved if he's the pick? What's your read on that situation?
The problem is that him and Wendell is just not an NBA level shooting front court. It's just not. They're not going to shoot an NBA level. Even if Wendell busts out to be like Al Horford level shooting, it's still not like with what we're seeing in the bubble. That's not a competent shooting front court in the NBA. And the difference with him and Lowry is just like athletically, that's way under. I don't think that's really a good fit for those three. And then if like Thad's there, that's the worst shooting front court in the league. I mean, look at like what the Thunder have done just by having Gallinari at center and just having other shooters around have been able to hang with the Rockets. That's not a good fit. I just don't like the fit. I don't hate Denny. Like I don't think he's a bad prospect or anything. I mean, it's rare that an actually bad prospect is getting top 10 hype. What was the last one? Thomas Robinson? Like,
oh God.
Somebody who was legitimately just like not. And we thought he seemed better than he was. So I don't know if he counts. I wouldn't take him. I understand the appeal. I just don't understand the appeal top five.
Last Denny question. Do you, like, people are calling him a combo forward. So we already talked about his position a little bit, but, like, you know, do you think it would be tenable to have Denny playing NBA small forward minutes?
I guess Otto did this year. I mean, I think all fours are combo forwards at this point. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Gallinari, like, bring him up again. He was a three for a while. Thinking of like a Joe Ingles is considered a combo forward. Actually, Joe Ingles is like the way he handles the ball is kind of how Denny handles the ball. It's just he can't shoot.
Ingles is like a 40% 3-point shooter.
Ingles is a lights out. He was a 49 his last year in Australia. He was a monster shooter. The one positive I will say about Denny is he's a wing, which is, I think that's the biggest reason they're looking at him, because even the Bulls have to understand how absolutely dire their wing selection is. Hutchinson's a combo forward. That's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Like he can play three, but he's a four really, if he's anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I don't know. The one positive is that he's not going to make them good enough to take them out of the Cade Cunningham sweepstakes. So I guess I wouldn't be that mad about it.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But I want to focus on this for now. So, like, okay, second guy I'm going to ask you about, hotly debated, I would say, amongst Twitter viewers, but most people are anti this guy, and I'm talking, of course, about Obi Toppin. Now, there's a lot of reasons to be totally out on Obi Toppin. I can actually somewhat maybe talk myself into it, even though he's absolutely a flawed player. But just general Obi Toppin thoughts. If the Bulls take Obi Toppin, like, would you view that as a fucking disaster? Would you be able to talk yourself into it?
They'd have to trade somebody. They'd have to. Because Obi can shoot. Obi's a good offensive. He's going to be probably at worst, like, Bobby Portis level scorer in the NBA. Like, he will score. He'll probably have some games where he puts up like 35. He just can't. He's a good passer. Like, I'm not, but he's just such a disaster defensively, and he's old. It's not like, it's like Precious Achiuwa, the opposite. Like, Precious Achiuwa is a disaster offensively, and people call him raw, but he's like 21. Obi is almost 23. He's almost 23-year-old sophomore. Like, he's old as dirt, and he's not like he's 20. He's like almost as old as Jason Tatum. Like, right now, the same age. He's like a day older than Jay, younger than Jason Tatum or something like that. It's crazy. And like, he's not going to get better. He moves, and his thing is, like, it's not an IQ or he makes bad reads. He can't move. Like, he moves great vertically. He cannot turn. He is ungodly slow. He's like, this is going to be weird for people who aren't football fans. He's like end of career Lance Briggs slow, where he just like takes him 10 seconds to turn. It's really painful. He turns like a boat. He's almost as slow as Wiseman, and he's like half a foot shorter. Not legitimately, but I don't know. Obi will score, and he's a good shooter. He'll pass, and he's going to have cool lobs. So, like, he's a fun player. If they're picking, like, 8 or 9, I'd probably be okay with it. I just don't like him top 5. He's going to have to be a monster scorer.
Right. And, you know, he's getting comped to John Collins a lot. That was the first comp that I thought of when I started to watch Obi at the Maui Invitational when he was lighting up Kansas a little bit. So Collins is pretty good, and I actually think that Obi has higher offensive upside than Collins, because I think that he is better attacking the basket and more agile attacking the basket in space on the short roll, and I think he could pass a little bit better than Collins can, for sure, in terms of, like, you know, beating the 4-on-3 situations as the roll man. So I actually really like Toppin's offense, kind of. I think that, like, if you were to build a team that had shooters everywhere else and Obi Toppin flying for sick dunks to the basket, it could maybe work. But the only way it could work is if every other player on the team could, like, insulate him defensively and could, like, really be great team defenders.
Or if you're the Mavericks, he'd probably work great there. He's not going to make it to there, but he'd be a great Maverick because he would just go nuts shooting and dunking.
So, I don't really want Toppin, but part of me thinks that I would rather have Toppin than Denny. And I believe that those are the two choices that I think they will be choosing from. I hope I'm wrong, but that's my read on the situation coming into it.
Well, let's get to the other guy, that guy that you mocked and who Brian just said he wants. Let's talk about Killian Hayes more. Why do you guys like Killian Hayes for the Bulls? I know Ricky, on our blast pod, you said that you like him there, but you don't think they'll take him. You just kind of mentioned that there. Why do you like Killian Hayes so much for the Bulls at 4?
He is 6'6" and 220 pounds, and he's an 88% foul shooter and is a 3-to-1 assist to turnover guy at 18 years old in a professional basketball league. And he's good at defense. He's a really, like, a great defender sometimes. He looks awesome. I was a little lower on him because he kind of looked like D'Angelo Russell too much. I think he's definitely watched a lot of Russell tape. The same way that when Kevin Porter was coming out, he got James Harden comps because he wants to be James Harden. I think Killian has watched a lot of Russell tape. But, I mean, the physical, like, he has the same kind of, like, not really dominant physically. He's just large, strong, really good at creating space, good floater guy. He's weird because I don't remember what his final numbers were, but he's a bad spot-up shooter. Like, he's not good at it. But at one point, he was shooting, like, 52% on pull-ups, which is a weird, like, he's an on-ball player entirely, and that's kind of why I want him for the Bulls, because they need that. the Bulls need a guy who has the ball a lot and makes decisions who isn't Kobe White or Zach LaVine. I mean, I do like both of them, but like they're not Monte Morris is what I'll say. They're not always making good decisions with the ball. And Killian is like an absolute master in the pick and roll. Just has that gift to make those passes, the skip passes and all the sideways ones. He's left-handed, which makes it harder to guard a lot of times in pick and roll because he'll reject screens and go the other way and throw defenders off. And the idea that a guy who's a great pull-up shooter who has like great footwork on that and shoots in the high 80s and free throws is not going to be a good three-point shooter is there's no reason to think that. I don't think that's ever happened. Not at least like an average three-point shooter. I think he's at 31 or 32% for the year, but a lot of those were spot-ups, which he's just not good at. But he's 18. Well, 19 now. Sorry, I keep thinking it's the normal draft time.
Yeah, I really like Killian because for multiple reasons. I mean, to me, he's a top three player in this class overall. And when the Bulls landed at number four, I thought, well, that's a no-brainer, man. Just take Killian Hayes. This is great. He's not going to go in the first three picks, so this actually worked out wonderfully for the Bulls. But, of course, his NBA stock is not as high as it is to a lot of us armchair analysts, and it is because I think – I need to ask more NBA guys on this, but I think it's because he's just not really the type of explosive athlete around the rim that you typically expect from a guard getting picked in the top five. So – you know, to me, I think the Bulls rebuild has sort of distilled a greater truth about basketball to me at this point, which is that, like, you can have a lot of interesting guys, but if you do not have a primary creator, they can all look like dog shit. And I think that, you know, the picture of the Bulls' young guys would look very, very differently if they still had a primary creator like Jimmy Butler, like, with this current core. I know it's not really possible, but just hypothetically, or if they, you know, of course, were to get Luka, but the primary creator is just so important because now you have someone like Zach LaVine, who at times looks like a lights out scorer, but he's judged under this light of him playing out of like in a role that he should never have, which is as your guy who's, you know, running the pick and rolls in the isolations. But, you know, how much different would everything look if Lauri Markkanen, another guy who can't create his own offense, something like 72% of Markkanen's baskets are assisted, but how much better does he look if he's playing with a great primary creator and, you know, coached by someone who's not the worst coach of all time in Jim Boylan? So to me, LaMelo has the best chance to be a star-level primary creator in this draft. That's why I have him number one. Killian Hayes has the second best chance to be a star-level primary creator in this draft. And the comp I'm going to throw out there, it's not a perfect comp because, as Brian talked about, Killian, for whatever reason, has struggled to shoot off the ball. Maybe that will totally change in the league as he gets older and just, you know, more adapted to whatever role that is. Because mostly on Killian's German league team, he was almost exclusively playing off the ball. They didn't really have another shot creator on that team from when I watched games. So
no, they've not.
But my comp was going to be Malcolm Brogdon. Similarly big and strong. Brogdon, of course, had the 40-50-90 season, spotting up off the ball almost exclusively in Milwaukee and sort of surprised us when he went to the Pacers and you're like, oh, damn, actually Malcolm Brogdon can sort of be a primary creator. That is kind of how I view Killian.
Or at the very least, Brogdon is a very good downhill pick and roll guard because he just gets around the pick and, like, what guard is going to get in front of him after that?
And he's smart as hell, and he's strong as hell, and he can shoot a little bit off the dribble. And
he's one of the best free throw shooters of all time. I think Brogdon was like third all time last time I looked.
He's been around 90%. I think his whole career. That sounds right.
Yeah, I like that comp too, and it does make more sense than the D'Angelo Russell one because it's hard. It's weird to say D'Angelo Russell, but good at defense because that's not really something that exists. It's like, what if Joakim Noah shot threes? It's like, well, what does that look like? I don't know.
He's a better consistent decision maker too, I think.
Yeah,
or he has the potential to be.
But you know, the Russell one works because, like I said, I think he's watched a lot of tape of Russell, so you can kind of see his, like, he has the same kind of flip, that little flip he does. The same kind of, like, he's trying to do some of Russell's more elaborate dribbles. Yeah, the step back. I mean, everyone who does a step back now, I think, is watching Harden do it. But, Yeah, I think between those two players is like his max outcome. And that player would be number one in this draft.
Yeah, that's a good player. And Killian Hayes is going to be there for the Bulls at number four. It's unfortunate that the league apparently doesn't view him that highly. I mean, we'll see what happens.
We don't know what AK thinks. I mean, we know they want to get smarter players than guys who can move the ball a bit. So, like, I mean, that kind of fits that profile, it seems like.
Take him, man. No brainer.
If they want a smart player, I have a player for them.
Good. I want to talk about this guy. You're talking about Halliburton.
Yes, of course I am. My close personal friend, Tyrese Halliburton. my favorite college basketball player of the last 15 years, I'd say. I love him.
Nice.
He's an absolute freak. Complete statistical weirdo. Like, it was a little depressed this year because he had to play lead initiator on a team that had no talent and bad shooters. But, yeah, what did he do last? Last year, on that good Iowa State team, let me find the exact numbers because I think he had more. Yes, he was a point guard who had more blocks than turnovers. He had 30 blocks and 28 turnovers for an entire college basketball season. And he's 6'5", 130 pounds. This year he had much more turnovers and blocks, but he still only had 61 turnovers in 800 minutes. That's pretty good. And like his efficiency numbers dropped across the board, but they dropped to like 50, 40, 84, something like that. And he had... There was some number I saw that he had on threes attempted off of his passes, his teammates were shooting like 12%, which is just it's like a criminal number. And he's a freak. Yeah, Halliburton, the only statistical comparison for him in the recent history of college basketball is Lonzo Ball. And unlike Lonzo Ball, he can move his legs and his hips and his knees at the same time. And he has like weird
layups.
Yeah. The only real reason I don't think Halliburton's going to go in the top five is he's not a rim pressure guy. He doesn't like get to the rim, which is what point guards do. Like he shoots well at the rim because he picks his shots and he will only take ones he can hit. But he definitely struggles like getting into the defense. He also overpasses sometimes. Like if you ever watch his highlights, the way he passes, it makes sense. Like he makes some of the most absurd. He might be the only good jump passer in basketball history. Halliburton's a freak. He's a great rebounder for a guard. He's the only way to really describe him is if like a weird hybrid of Monte Morris, DeLon Wright, and Lonzo. But if somehow he was smarter than that, because he's just a genius. He's a genius passer. It's really weird that he and LaMelo are in the same class because they're both like. It's two of the strangest point guards I can ever remember seeing. But yeah, 18 free throw rate is bad. That's not good. But he still had a 632 shooting, which is crazy. An 11.6 BPM, which is the normal BPM, which is crazy on a team that won like 9 games. He's an absolute complete savant. It's really telling that he went to the under 20 FIBA team. And was the second best player on the team that had like Jalen Green, who else was on that team? Reggie Perry, a bunch of guys in this class. Oh god,
Scotty Barnes.
Who's the other guy I'm thinking of? The other forward, Greg Nobody, Brown.
But he didn't play.
Nobody didn't play. Okay, Greg Brown was on that team, wasn't he?
I don't know.
Let me look it up really quick. I should look this up.
Yeah,
because I knew we were going to talk about it.
My quick retort on Halliburton, I would not want the Bulls to take him at number four. I do think that he could be a good NBA player for sure. So he's going to be an interesting test case because Halliburton's numbers, his efficiency numbers are pretty much unassailable. As Brian alluded to, he had a 66 true shooting percentage as a freshman, but had a very low usage rate, like a 9% usage rate. So the big question for him coming into this year was, could he increase his usage rate as a sophomore because he was going to be like the featured player on the team and still maintain his efficiency? And for the most part, he did it. He had a 63% true shooting percentage. Like Brian said, he had a few more turnovers, but still really good assist to turnover ratio guy. To me, he's more like Lonzo Ball than LaMelo Ball is. And the big difference is that Halliburton is a very good spot-up three-point shooter, like high-level spot-up three-point shooter. In some ways, he actually reminds me of Satoransky a little bit, too.
Yeah.
in that, like, so that's why I think he's interesting, because, like, I look at the numbers and I think, well, if someone was this good statistically, they're probably good at basketball. But then, like, my eye test, for whatever that's worth, it's like, he's so skinny. I think he's just going to get targeted relentlessly on defense. And even, like, NBA guards who aren't, like, you don't think of as super jacked are going to have a significant strength advantage on Haliburton. And I think that he is someone who's going to basically have a target on his chest defensively early in his career because he's at a strength deficiency. And then two, as Brian said, like, the guy just does not break you down off the dribble and get to the rim. That's just, like, not part of his game. So
he looks to pass immediately, and he's great at it, but that's, like, it's going to be a problem. Yeah.
Yeah, while he is a good passer, like, so much of the value of passing comes after you collapse the defense and you, like, you know, force the action and then read the floor, make a pass, or be someone who, you know, best case scenario, like, has the defense guessing 50-50 on whether or not you're going to score or dish. So I just really wonder about how tenable he can be as
a point guard.
Anything more than, like, a fifth starter or a fourth starter. But he could be a really good one, I think. Like, I really like him in Golden State, actually. Which
he's a connector. He's a connector passer is what we call that. The best way to describe, like, the best stat I have for him is at one point, I think it was right before the Big 12 tournament last season, when he was on the good, you know, he was on a team that had, like, NBA talent on it, Mariel Shayok and Wigginton and Talen Horton Tucker. At one point he had a 45-1 assist to turnover ratio in transition. Like, he had something like 90 assists and 2 turnovers in transition. That's, like, savant shit. He's a savant. He makes some of the most aesthetically pleasing passes I've ever seen in my life. But yeah, I don't think you can draft him and have him be a lead guard. It's just not going to work. And that's why I wouldn't take him. I'd love it if they did. Like, if somehow, for some reason, they traded back and they took him at, like, 8, I'd be ecstatic.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
But,
like,
yeah,
he went back, like, 7 or 8.
But he, yeah, but I think if you draft him, if you draft a guard in the top 5, they come with an expectation of, like,
being
an attacking guard. Yeah. And he's not. He can't fulfill that. The one other guy I wanted to talk about for maybe that spot, if they want an attacking guard, they can go after Kyra Lewis, who was also on that under-19 team. I would love that, but I don't think they will, even if I think he could absolutely bring back that value. But he's a weird case because he may have been – it's hard to tell if Nate Oates being there and running a pro-style offense is responsible for him or if it just helped him show his NBA talent. The one positive is that he's one of the fastest human beings alive. And he's a good passer. He's a good shooter. He's like 6'2", 180. He's like jaw size, but doesn't quite have jaw's burst, which is concerning. But I mean, Colin Sexton's making it work well enough. You know, I don't think being really small is. I mean,
he had a decent year.
He looks more like a decent man.
Yeah, he became like a not horribly negative NBA player on a bad team, which is like more than I expected.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just Garland next to him made him look better this year, but we'll see. But yeah, I don't know. They're in a tough spot because they need a wing. I mean, I guess if I had one other target, it'd be Vassell.
I was going to ask about him next.
I was going to ask about him too. So let's talk about Vassell. What do you think of Vassell? And do you think that he's like, you know, if he was the fourth, do you think he's a viable fourth pick?
Yes.
To me, I would rather have him than Denny or Obi.
Yes. Easily. I mean, the worst case for Vassell is like, what? Mikal Bridges?
He's not that, like, long.
But he has more, he already has more like isolation game than Mikal probably will ever have. I don't know, who's like a long, well, not
Vassell. I was thinking like short Covington.
Yeah, like, Vassell is, he, as I've mentioned this several times, for a guy who played in the ACC on a good team, he finished his career with more points than turnovers, more assists than turnovers, more rebounds than turnovers, more steals than turnovers, and more blocks than turnovers. Playing in the ACC, like, he's an underrated decision maker. He does not make mistakes on either end. He will sometimes dribble into, like, kind of tough twos, but he's pretty good at hitting them. And that, if that's like your weakest attribute as an NBA player, you, like, the floor for him he's one of those guys where, like, there's nothing he's not going to be pretty good at, except for maybe self-creation, which I get that fourth pick is kind of low, but, like, I would have taken Covington top 10 looking back, knowing what we know now, and that's his weakness. And Mikal Bridges, that's his weakness. I'd take him top 10 immediately. No doubt in my mind.
Both guys have been pretty good.
Yeah. Vassell is tied with being, since I started doing this full time and like after the 2017 draft, he is tied with someone else as the best team defender I've ever seen, and that someone else is Chuma Okeke. And the difference is he doesn't weigh 240 pounds and has knee injuries like Chuma Okeke. And I love Chuma Okeke. Vassell is a monster. He's an absolute. I can't remember the exact parameters for this. It was 6'7", or no, it was 6'5", or taller players who had faced a certain amount of pick and rolls as like the primary defender. And it was in college, it was the amount of turnovers they forced. Number two was Jimmy Butler at 26%. Number one was Devin Vassell at almost 31. Almost 31% of the pick and roll he faced, he caused a turnover on. That's an absolutely absurd number. Because he just takes it. He just takes the ball from people, or he'll just wait back and read them and jump. Because, Ricky said he's not super long, but he is like 6'7", 6'10". Like, he's 6'7", with like a 6'10 wingspan. That's pretty good. And he's a freak reaction time guy, and he's a really good athlete. He's a freak. He's a complete freak, like, IQ-wise and reading the basketball, and he's a good athlete. I really like Vassell. He's one of my favorite guys.
Vassell is my number two guy who I would want for the Bulls. I would want Hayes one, and then I would say Vassell. But I got a couple questions for you, Brian, on Vassell. Just curious how you'll answer them. First of all, like, I think, you know, if you're drafting a 3-and-D wing, which, like, one thing that I think, you know, we'll all agree on is, like, 3-and-D wing, it's, you know, you can sort of get, like, siloed in that role, but a really good 3-and-D wing is, like, a super valuable player in the NBA. Yeah. But a big key to that is being a high-volume three-point shooter. So my first question is, do you believe that he can be someone who is, like, you know, taking six, seven attempts a game, even if it's mostly a catch and shoot, and hitting 40%, like, high-volume three-point shooter? Because if Florida State, he didn't really have a ton of volume. I mean, he took 100 threes this year.
The thing is that's Florida State. Like, nobody takes high. They don't have high volume shoot. Like, nobody takes that many shots there. They spread everything out. I think he could easily take 6 or 7 and still shoot 36-37%, maybe 38%. Danny Green is a comp. Like, he's not going to be that kind of shooter, but he's more of a ball handler than Danny Green. But he kind of looks like Danny Green physically, and he kind of moves like Danny Green. And Danny Green's been a top five, like, by PFPM. He's been like a top five shooting guard in the last decade. Like, he's been a great player. And he finally hit shots tonight, so I feel like less of an idiot for liking him. But Vassell, I think Vassell, like Otto, has a little bit more as like a creator for other people in his game. Like, I think he has something there, because he makes really, really quick passes, which is, like, you know, that's the key to being a secondary creator. It's just don't hold the ball. I mean, he was 49%. From the field this year, that's fine. 41, I think it's 73 foul shooter is a little, but he didn't take enough. Like, he's one of those guys who, like, I remember John Contar 2 years ago just didn't get to the line for like 3 weeks, so his foul percentage stayed at like 60 all the way into the conference play, and he ended up at like 74. But John Contar is like a great shooter, so sometimes that happens. You just don't get to the line enough, or you go like 2 for 6 in a game, and it just stays there. Or you become Jarrett Culver and you forget how to shoot free throws for some reason. I'm not going to get over that one.
I like Vassell. Like I said, he's my number two pick for this bowl spot. But I do question how much he can give you off the dribble. Like, I don't really know if he can get to the rim. He never got to the line a lot, like you said. And I do wonder, like, you know, how – basically, it's like all you got to be able to do is attack and close out.
Yeah.
So, like, how viable – is he attacking closeouts? But, you know, I guess we'll see. And then defensively, like, high level, right? Like, sort of.
I have no doubts. It's at least as good as Thybulle was last year, and he's younger.
Oh, wow. I mean, Thybulle makes just the highlight plays. And Thybulle's stronger, I would say. And Thybulle has more hops, I would say.
I've seen Vassell. He had last year when he didn't play very much, he had 2 or 3 huge putback dunks. Like, he gets up there on those. I would say Thibault's a little more bouncy, like contesting, but Devin gets up there. He just kind of moves. He's one of those guys who's really fast, but doesn't have like the quick twitch, like the burst. He just kind of goes. He has like one speed, but the one other positive with him, just look at Denny, is if they could take him this year and still win 25 games and then be right in a good position to get one of the multiple lead guys who should be in 2021. That's the hope, if there is a college basketball season.
For sure. And then one last guy I want to ask you about is Isaac Okoro. I have two takes on Isaac Okoro. My first take is that if Isaac Okoro can become like a really good shooter, he's probably going to be the best player in the class. My second take is that if you put Isaac Okoro into a like spot up role on offense early in his career, he will probably be one of the worst offensive players in the league.
Yeah,
because he can't shoot. Everyone can ignore him. I actually think the Bulls might not be a terrible spot for him because, you know, if you go front court of Lowry and Wendell, hopefully Wendell shoots it a little bit better like we expect him to. But like, I think you can use Okoro as a role man. And I think Okoro has to be used as a role man or just like used creatively early in his career because he is such a poor outside shooter.
Yeah, he's a worse shooter than the last two guys that archetype the Bulls have had, Shaq Harrison and Nwaba. He's a worse shooter than the two of them. Like, teams just ignored him completely. He's a good passer, like off the dribble passer for a guy like that. I love Okoro aesthetically, and I think he's going to be a solid NBA player. I don't think I'd take him that high. That's just, he can't score. They can't shoot. He could score okay. Like, he could finish okay, but he's not. I have very strong doubts he's ever going to be. And look what it did to Lou Dort, who has been good, but like he didn't even get drafted because of it. And I don't know if Okoro should even be a top 10 pick with that limitation.
I do think that if he learns how to shoot it, though, like
he could be Jimmy Butler, but I don't think that'll happen.
He's a really good defensive player. Mm-hmm. Really,
he
good.
Is one of the rare. He is one of the rare players who's legitimately good at team defense and is like a really strong.
On-ball.
Aggressive on-ball defender. Because usually you don't get like DeAndre Hunter, strong on-ball defender, nothing particularly interesting as a team defender, and it made him not a good defensive player his first year, really. I would say Vassell's that too, but he's not as strong. Yeah, like trying to think of anyone else who even fits that bill, like a recent 6'5", 6'6 guy who's good at both. I guess Jimmy Butler, but we didn't know what Jimmy was.
I'm watching Donovan Mitchell just go ham on the Nuggets, and I'm thinking, man, they could sub in Isaac Okoro right now, Denver could, and have pretty good on-ball defense and team defense on Mitchell, much better than anything they have on the roster, and he's 19 years old.
Much better than anything they have on the roster who is healthy and able to play. Sorry to Gary Harris.
Yeah, that's true.
Former Bulls legend, Gary Harris.
Icon.
What a absolute fucking disaster. I still think about that trade and get mad. And it's nothing to do with Doug. I like Doug. But, man. Look how good Nurkic has been this year.
The other thing about that trade, too, is, like, it's just shit value. Like, we just talked about what it took for the Wolves to move up. Like, if you're doing the NFL draft thing where you have, like, the pick values and stuff, that would have been way lopsided against the Bulls.
They gave up two mid-firsts for what? Doug is
to move up five. Spots.
I think it was for a 22-year-old or whatever. Like that's to move up like five spots for a 22-year-old, like who was obviously going to be like a role player in the NBA. And I think he actually was pretty good for the Pacers this year. Although I think in this playoff series he was awful.
He's been obliterated by the Heat. Yeah.
But I mean that's crushed. Not that surprising.
Not the Heat.
Yeah.
Well, you forget that
why do we have to bring this up?
He looks good in a suit, so John Paxson likes him.
He's great
he's a
hair.
Respectable young man.
Yeah.
Some other dog whistle bullshit that John Paxson likes.
Oh man. Ricky, you got anything else to ask? We should probably wrap it up here.
What's your hottest draft take? I guess you got Poku at number one. You can't get hotter than that.
Mason Jones in the top 20. And James Wiseman not in the top 20.
Ricky doesn't like James. I mean, it seems like just in general, like
I got Wiseman like 10.
Yeah, I mean the way the NBA is these days, I mean just like Why would you take a big man? Like, he can't shoot, right?
No. Well, why would you take him?
Shoot okay on like spot ups, but he's not like a fluid mover.
And at this point, like, it just seems weird to take a big dude if he like isn't super versatile.
You know what? One of Wiseman's biggest weaknesses. Sorry, let me. Obi Toppin have one of the same, and Isaiah Stewart, who I don't think should even be drafted, and Daniel Turu. They all have the same weakness, which is they aren't very good at jumping while moving backwards, which is extremely important for a big man to do. Like, that's a pretty critical, like, rim protection thing. Now, Wiseman will still block shots. He'll get some rebounds.
He's huge. Yeah. But
he had a – do you guys remember when DeJuan Blair almost ripped Hashim Thabeet's arms off? And it was like, that's concerning for the NBA. He had that happen, but it was with Francis Okoro on Oregon, who's not a draft prospect. But Francis Okoro just picked him up with one arm and pushed him out of bounds and dunked on him. And it was like, that's the one good team they played. And he almost fouled out of that game. He had a decent game. But like all the Oregon bigs, and Oregon's one of those teams who plays a bunch of 6'8 guys, they just beat the shit out of him. Like, they just pushed him around. And it's like, I saw that happen enough where Okongwu would throw him around like a child. Okongwu is 6'9", 240. And it's like, what do you think, like, Yusuf Nurkic is going to do to this fucking guy? Jonas Valanciunas is going to eat him, like, rip his head off. Like, he's not going to be ready to defend one-on-one against NBA centers for several years, if ever. And he had a 52-2 shooting in EYBL play. That's bad. Like, he's not – I don't know why. The narrative that he's an elite prospect comes from him being 7 foot and doing dunks in the open court. It's like, that's cool, but – doesn't make him an old prospect.
That just seems like an old-fashioned type deal. Like, you don't take a guy that high anymore.
I got a take on why he's going so fast. I've actually seen Wiseman play live probably more than anyone because I saw him at USA basketball camp when he was a rising junior, the USA mini camp where they bring in the top 60 kids in the country. And then I saw him play two games on the EYBL in Indianapolis. It was the same year. So he
looked terrifying.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to say? Like, physically, he's terrifying looking.
Wide shoulders, super long arms. But here's the real thing. I think that James Wiseman is, like, unbelievably fucking fast running down the court.
He's very fast in a straight line, yeah.
Unbelievably slow with, like, his load time. Like, he can't do anything quickly on the court, but he's really straight line fast if he's just running in transition.
That's where Whiteside comes up for me a lot, because Whiteside will get down the floor. He just don't expect him to turn, or else he'll fall over. Somebody made like Jermaine O'Neal as a comp, and it's like that's not bad either.
I don't. But, he had more offensive skill than Wiseman, I think.
But like, well, I think like late career Jermaine, like Jermaine O'Neal got played out of the NBA. Like he could be like Hibbert. Like the guys he compares to are not NBA players right now.
Also, got played out of the NBA.
Yeah, like it's. I don't know. He's smart. He's a very smart kid. So like, I don't have anything against him personally, and he'll go in the top. He probably won't be terrible. He's just not going to be like this elite big man player. It's David, like the David Robinson comps were dumb for Ayton, and he's much closer to that than Wiseman will ever be.
Absolutely. That was the other thing I was going to say is how bad does Ayton go in number one now look? And Ayton to me is such a better prospect than Wiseman. And that's not even taking in the defensive improvements Ayton made this year. Ayton, I think, looks honestly better now than I thought he would at this point.
Yeah.
Ayton looks pretty good.
Well, he realized he finally figured out that he had to try to play defense, which, you know, to be fair to a guy like that, if you look like that in high school, would you try? I don't think I would.
You don't have to. You stand there and block shots and grab the ball.
I think I'm actually glad for Ayton that they had that game against Buffalo in the tournament where he got basically run off the court because Buffalo just played 4 point guards and ran around him and hit layups and threes all game. And he just embarrassed. They embarrassed him. And then, you know, Sean Miller had no counters because he's not a very good basketball coach. But and they didn't have that much talent. I don't know. The Wiseman thing is really frustrating and confusing because it's just like ESPN pushing it, really. It always was. Like I know he had good numbers, but he played – who'd they even play? They played two nobodies and they played Oregon and he was okay against Oregon and then he quit. Then he sat out, which was probably a smart choice on his part.
Yeah. Do you got a title pick?
I see. I would have said Bucks a week ago, but Middleton looking like shit. You know what?
My Bucks are not looking.
I'm going to say that the Raptors will repeat.
Love it. I kind of like it. I picked. They look great.
The they could lose in five to the Celtics, and I'll look like an idiot. But you know, if Kyle Lowry can come back,
yeah, Lowry. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they look awesome. Fred VanVleet's been fucking incredible. Serge Ibaka put up like 30 on like 10 shots yesterday. The other day. Like,
Mark is looking incredible. Better. Looking more like. Looking like he, you know, worked out, which he obviously didn't do last offseason, because why would he? He won an NBA title. OG is a monster.
Norm has been great.
I love Norm. Siakam's been
so productive. That series, I'm really excited for that series.
That's Bradley a great series.
Should be goodness to me, fucking dope.
Both of the second round series in the East are gonna be sick.
Yeah, I mean, Heat.
When the last time we could say that?
Yeah.
No, the weird thing is,
give the Bucks a run.
I'm really excited for the West second round series, even though we don't know what they're gonna be, because they're all. The idea of like, because it would be Rockets Thunder versus Lakers versus Clippers Mavs winners, right?
No, I think Rockets versus
Rockets, Lakers.
Rockets Lakers.
Or Thunder. With the 2-2 now.
Yeah. So yeah, then they'll play be the Mavs or the Clippers, probably disemboweling the Jazz, to be honest. Like the Jazz,
I would assume Donovan Mitchell will not be shooting like 60% in every game moving
even,
forward.
Even as the Mavs struggles defensively, they have better perimeter defenders than that. Like they'll just put Dorian Finney-Smith on him, or like even like Tim Hardaway. Tim Hardaway does better. He'll play defense sometimes.
Sorry, Michael Porter Jr.
Nah, he's been awful.
I'd still rather have Waddell.
Yes.
Porter.
I'd rather have
one of my friends has been like tight, like when Porter was going off, like his he does not like Wendell much in general, and when Porter was going off, like whatever during the bubble, it's going up, it's like texting me like, oh, Michael Porter Jr., like look at him going off, rather him over Wendell, like dude's getting played off the floor now, he looks like shit.
The problem with MBJ I think he's been better than I expected.
Yeah,
the problem with MBJ is like, is he going to be a lead scorer? If he's not, then like, are you going to pay him for $30 million a year? They should look to trade him for Beal if they can. That'd be a great fit.
Yeah, I would totally move him because he has high trade value. He is honestly an absolutely sick shot maker.
He's an incredible shot maker. But it's just like, he's not Kevin Durant. He's not going to handle the ball like that. So, what's like, he's a second or third scorer.
He's not like too far removed from it, though. And you normally don't see a guy who's like 75% Kevin Durant just because like that body type doesn't really exist. And he sort of does have it.
I just think specifically about him on the Bulls. Like, is he going to be the lead scorer? If not, then I don't want to want him. Also, just don't want MAGA.
Him and Zach together would be certainly be a treat.
Well, and again, like MPJ's not going to be in a position where he's running a bunch of pick and rolls and shit, and that's what you need. Which is why you need to draft Killian Hayes in this draft.
There it is.
No one else can do it besides for him and LaMelo.
Or they can sign Monte Morris,
your guy.
I would absolutely like start him if it's like a bad team, because it's like he's gonna make your like. If for some reason he was like in the Chris Chioza spot where he was like on a team that wasn't that good, like, or a team that was decimated by injury, I would start him just to be like, he will teach your guys how to like be in the right spots and what to do. But enough about Monte. I love Monte.
Yeah.
The greatest turnover ratio in NBA history.
So when we start talking about Monte Morris and Chris Chioza, it's probably time to wrap it up here. But this was great. Very informative, especially for me, a draft novice, listening to you guys talk about these prospects. Obviously, I need to start to get to know these guys better. This is a great start, listening to you guys talk. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. Mm-hmm. Tell us where we could find you on Twitter, anything else you want to plug here.
I write stuff on Dime whenever they want, stuff on Draft People, which was really weird this summer because there was a draft. I have a Patreon that I put stuff on, not as much as I should, sadly, but I'm gonna have my big capsule thing out. I mean, it's out, but I'm gonna like finish it off. 80 prospects with full stats and all that stuff. Malachi Flynn in the top 30. That's one I forgot to say earlier. I'm on Twitter. I don't know. This is my hobby, so if people want to support it, that's fine by me.
Do it. Subscribe to Brian's Patreon. I think it's $1 a month. He puts out
whatever you want
stuff. So yeah. Follow Brian on Twitter. He's got some good Cubs takes, Bears takes, even Bulls takes. Really
good White Sox takes, though.
Good Batman takes.
It's great takes all around. Great takes all around. Thank you again for joining us, man. Mm-hmm. Always a pleasure to get the draft stuff. For us here, Cash Considerations with me and Ricky, as always, please rate and review us wherever you listen to your pods. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. We're part of the Blue Wire Network. Shout out to our great ad sponsors, TheraOneCBD, NFL Sunday Ticket, and BetOnline. So for this week, for Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast, Jason, Ricky, we will talk to you guys next week. I have no idea what the hell we're going to talk about next. We have tons of playoff action. Maybe the Bulls will hire a coach soon. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see it happen. We'll talk to you guys soon. Did somebody say playoffs? NBA and NHL are playing for the gold, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered. Get in on all the action, including a new NBA bracket contest with plenty of chances to win. MLB season is pushing into fall, and there's no shortage of ways to bet with hundreds of odds, futures, and props. So take advantage of the return of all these sports, and remember, the casino never closes. Check it out all day, all night. So go to betonline.ag and use that promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, promo code BLUEWIRE. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.